This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 329, for the weekend of September 7th through September 9th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office, this podcast where we talk about movies, TV, and other stuff that we might find interesting, and we hope you do too. So, Art, how's it going over there?
It's going very good. I was off today, so, you know, any day I'm off is a day I can't really complain. It rained like crazy out here in Texas, but I didn't have to work in it.
Good for you. Good for you. Rain? Yeah. Oh my God. Rain. All right. So, speaking of rain, the dollars didn't exactly rain at the box office this last weekend, but we need to talk about it either way. So for last weekend, which is the weekend of August 31st through September 2nd, and this is just the three-day totals. We're not going to be counting Monday for Labor Day. So here's your top five. At number one, in its third week release, we have Crazy Rich Asians with a weekend gross of, we're going to say $22 million. For a total gross of $110 million. At number two, we have The Meg in the fourth week release at $10.5 million. It's pulled down $120 million domestic so far. In its sixth week of release, at number three, Mission Colon Impossible - Fallout, $7 million. At number four, since I've been talking about the other movies this way, the total gross is $204 domestic for Mission Impossible. Number four, up from previous week 22, Searching on 1,207 theaters, it has pulled down $6 million with a percent change of 1,460%. And so it's pulled in $6 million. Total. And at number five, hey, look, it's a new release. Operation Finale. $6 million, 1,818 screens, per screen average of just over $3,000. And so that is your roundabout top five at the box office last week.
You talk about not making it rain, but these are some good numbers here. I mean, Crazy Rich Asians is on a $30 million budget, and they pulled in $21 million on week three. And this is just a three-day weekend, not including the Labor Day. And I think that's not bad at all. I had heard Meg is doing really well overseas. Meg is currently at almost $500 million worldwide. So,
okay, so just for a second here, mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the previous week's box office.
Okay.
So almost every movie that has a really good opening weekend. And, you know, we do have to realize that, you know, Crazy Rich Asians, the first week it came out was $26 million, which is not great. It's good for August, but mostly most of the big tentpole movies like Infinity War, mm-hmm. Deadpool 2, drops of 50-60%. Because, you know, most people are going to say, I'm going to be their opening weekend.
Right.
It's not a word of mouth type movie. Crazy Rich Asians from the and as long as I've been doing the show, I've never seen a low number like this. The drop between the first and second week of release, 6.4%.
That's incredible.
Okay, so that's going from 1 to 2. Now we go from 2 to 3, 11.5%. Okay, but is it really that amazing for this weekend? You look at the top 10. Going from top to bottom, 11.5 for Crazy Rich Asians, 17.8 for The Meg, 13% for Mission Impossible. We already talked about Searching being way up, but Christopher Robin down 15%, Alpha 24%, Happy Time Murders 54%.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of an outlier. Black Klansman 17%, Mile 22 40%, and you know there's the top 10. So maybe that means word of mouth. Maybe it's just a Labor Day effect somehow. I don't know.
But it's
very, very interesting about Crazy Rich Asians.
Between Labor Day,
we're going to have to keep an eye on how low a number it can manage from week to week.
Yeah, I think between Labor Day and between what else opened, you know, it wasn't a big weekend for openers.
All right. So not another big weekend for openers, but this is the part of the show where we talk about what's coming out in the theater this weekend. So Art is going to tell us about the first of two movies that's coming out in a wide release at the theater this weekend.
All right. First up, we are going to talk about The Nun. It is 33% rotten on the tomato meter, 63 reviews counted, 21 fresh, 42 rotten. 92% out of 1,200 people want to see it. When a young nun at a cloistered abbey in Romania takes her own life, a priest with a haunted past and a novitiate. That's not that word. I'm sure it's a word I should know, and it's just not coming to me. Novate? I don't know. On the threshold.
I think it's novitiate.
Okay, novitiate.
Yeah.
Going to have to look that one up later. On the threshold of her final vows are sent by the Vatican to investigate. Together they uncover the order's unholy secret.
I like hoarders better, but go ahead.
Risking not only their lives, but their faith and their very souls, they confront a malevolent force in the form of the same demonic nun that first terrorized audiences in The Conjuring 2, as the Abbey becomes a horrific battleground between the living and the damned. Rated R for terror, violence, and disturbing bloody images. The genre is horror. Directed by Corin Hardy. Written by Gary Dauberman. Runtime, 96 minutes. I don't know any of these people.
No one you know.
This is a...
No one you know.
This is a third-rate horror movie that... people might go see.
Well, let me ask you this: what's the difference between horror and terror?
I don't know.
It's just for our ratings. I don't see a lot of terror.
Okay.
And so I was wondering out loud what that meant. Yeah, there's a whole lot of rotten reviews, which obviously isn't too shocking with a 33% Rotten Tomato score, but yeah. The trailer looked pretty scary, but unfortunately, I guess they couldn't deliver on that. All right, so what are the critics are saying about this one? So Oliver Jones from the New York Observer. Do any of these various jump scares ever register? Not really. For that to happen, the movie would have to have built up tension and suspense, which I guess it figures it isn't required to do. Oh yeah, that's a rating of 1 out of 4. If you couldn't tell. We also have... ooh, Roger Moore, get in and get out. Not scary enough to cure your hiccups. 1.5 out of 4.
Not scary enough to cure your hiccups. Ouch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, nobody's seeing this. Nobody I know.
Yeah. I'm constantly amazed by the disparity in rating systems. So Katie Rye from AV Club gives it a C+. We've talked about the 1 out of 4, 1.5 out of 4. So, I mean, they really got to get that half decimal point in. And then you have Kevin Mayer from The Times UK. He goes 1 out of 5. The scares are non-existent. Being pulled backwards along the floor into a darkened room hasn't been scary since Insidious in 2010.
I think Australia still had the weirdest one with the 17 out of 20. How many dollars I'd be willing to pay to see this movie?
Yeah, apparently some firm left their accountant's door unlocked. Those people got out. All right, so the second movie that's coming out, unfortunately, has half of the Rotten Tomatoes that The Nun did. I kind of screwed that up. Okay, I'm going to tell you about Peppermint. 17% on the tomato meter. Out of 35 reviews, 6 people thought it was fresh, 29 rotten. And out of 522, not even we couldn't even get higher than 500. 91% want to see it. So here's the description. Peppermint is an action thriller which tells the story of young mother Riley North, Jennifer Garner, who awakens from a coma after her husband and daughter are killed in a brutal attack on the family. When the system frustratingly shields the murderers from justice, Riley sets out to transform herself from citizen to urban guerrilla. Channeling her frustration into personal motivation, she spends years in hiding, honing her mind, body, and spirit to become an unstoppable force. How did they not say special set of skills? Eluding the underworld, the LAPD, the FBI, as she methodically delivers her personal brand of justice. This is rated R for strong violence and language throughout, could say pervasive. Genre, action and adventure. Oh, mystery and suspense. Written by Chad St. John, directed by Pierre Morel. And this will be 102 minutes. The only person you'll know is Jennifer Garner.
Yeah. Hey, you know why they didn't say a special set of skills? Because this isn't Taken. This is The Punisher.
Okay. Okay. I go along with that. Oh, let me take that back. You also will know Method Man as Agent Barker.
There you go. I've seen the previews for this. And I think it looks interesting. And I've got a soft spot for Jennifer Garner ever since Alias. So that's an easy sell for me. I don't know whether I actually get to see this, but I'm definitely interested in seeing it.
Sometimes you can't write this stuff, Art.
Okay.
Okay, I got to read William Bibbiani from IGN Movies. And this is actually a fresh review. Peppermint is a modest thriller. Whether you find it exciting or troubling might vary from person to person. But either way, Jennifer Garner delivers a standout performance that demands recognition. His rating, 6.7 out of 10. The madness. Yeah. It's madness.
It is. It is. They're just making stuff up here now.
Yeah. Well, I'm fine with that. But yeah. Anyways. Okay. Oh, and Adam Graham, since he's all into numerical ratings, give it a C-. A low grade piece of vigilante trash that should be above. Oh, that she should be above. Okay, there we go. I messed up his grammar. All right, so that's going to do it for the two movies coming out in wide release. And so we have finished our second segment, which means we can get to our third segment, which is share time. This is where Art and myself share what we've been up to, and it's been 2 weeks. So we'll see if anyone watched a movie or two. But before we get to that, we do have a voicemail from our guy, Tad. So, Tad, thank you very much. And as we are wont to do, any voicemails that we get, we will play during this portion of the show. So let's hear what Tad's been up to.
Hey, Backseat Box Office. This is Tad calling in with what I've been watching. Let's see. Trying to think what I saw. Oh, yeah. Okay. I have watched the Amazon Prime series called Jack Ryan, based on the Tom Clancy books. 8 episodes. Very good. I really liked it. The main character that plays Jack Ryan is the guy from The Office, the one that directed and starred in the movie The Silent Place. Does a great job. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait till the next season comes out. I'm hoping it's pretty soon, but who knows? Anyway, let's see. What else have I watched? That's pretty much it. I spent pretty much the last week or so watching that, getting that done and taking, any chance I had to watch anything. Hopefully I'll be going and seeing a movie here pretty soon, and I'll call in with that. But thanks for the show, guys. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right, Tad. Thank you very much for that. So, Art, what do you have to say about what Tad said?
Oh, just that one of my coworkers actually just recommended the new Jack Ryan series to me. The guy at work, Chris, he said he started watching it. He said he's really enjoying it. So, yeah, that's another one. Makes me even more interested in checking that out. But just there's so many things to watch.
So many things to watch. So many games to play. Mm. It's like, what do you
it's
do?
All,
what do you
it's do? Always something. Okay, so what have I watched? I have watched quite a few things. I am scrolling through my list here and wondering where to start. Okay, so I went and I saw The Happy Time Murders.
No.
I did. And I came out of it and I was like, it wasn't terrible. It had some funny parts. I was actually quite a bit I was a little up on it. I was like, you know, if you're into seeing puppets do bad things, it's not a huge waste of your time. Kind of that. That's kind of the way I came out of it feeling. You know, I wasn't disappointed in seeing it. And then my brother-in-law, Dallas PD, he's like, you know, we finally found some time to watch Super Troopers.
Oh boy.
Okay. And I laughed my ass off through that whole movie over and over and over again. And that's what a comedy is supposed to be. And watching it in such close proximity to the Happy Time Murders, I just became more and more like kind of disillusioned with that movie and realized how bad it was when comparing it to something that was truly great. I would watch Super Troopers again right now in a heartbeat. I can't wait. He's got Super Troopers 2. And the next time we find some time together, we're going to watch that. I'm really excited to see where that goes. In hindsight, it was really bad. And that 54% drop that you talked about, I'm not surprised. Once it kind of sinks in, it was just bad all around. Kind of disappointing. You're hoping for more. I wouldn't recommend it in any way, shape, or form. Go find a real, truly great comedy. Other things I have been watching. Okay, so I think there's 10 episodes of Disenchanted. I think I'm on like number 7 or 8. So I've been plowing through that. It's entertaining. It's interesting. I'm looking for an overarching story, and I'm not finding one yet. I'm wondering if it's going to tie it all together somewhere at the end, or if it's just telling a story that's kind of meandering along. It's got me interested enough that I'm going to finish it, but I'm feeling a little on the fence about it. I kind of want to compare it to the way I've kind of felt about Happy Time Murders. Like if I go and I watch some other series that's really fantastic, kind of close on the heels to this, it might diminish it because it's just kind of there. I started. There is a new YouTube series called Impulse, and somebody said it was a Jumper TV series. I don't know if it's based on Jumper or if it's related in any way, but I've watched the first 2 episodes, and the episodes they're tagged premium and free. And so far I've just been able to watch them. I don't know if at some point they're going to cut you off and you've got to pay to watch like the rest of the series. But I haven't gotten to that point yet. So I may report more on that later. And the last thing I watched, I started watching just while I was hanging out at the house today, a show called Tiger and Bunny. And it is this anime about a world where there are superheroes, and there is a TV show that watches the heroes fight crime and gives them points based on how well they are doing in apprehending criminals and saving civilians. It's like this game show thing. And at the end of the year, they award the hero who's the best. You know, like they title them the best hero. And it's this interesting look at like hero motivations for this cast of heroes. And the two main characters, Tiger and Bunny. Tiger is this kind of has-been, washed up, always messes things up, been a hero for like 10 years, and everybody treats him like an old man. And Bunny is this new hero who has the same power set as Tiger, and they team them up hoping that they'll kind of rub off on each other and help each other do better. And it's an interesting kind of character study. And I don't remember who recommended it, but I saw it on Netflix. I was looking for something anime to watch, and so I started watching it. I think I'm about 4 or 5 episodes in on that. There's definitely better anime out there to watch. I'm not going to recommend that one either. I'm gonna finish what's there because, you know, I don't know. I'm a glutton for punishment. It's got some interesting things to it. But I'm not loving it. It's got me just interested enough to want to finish it and see where it goes. And I think that wraps up all of my share time.
Okay, so for the next time you watch Super Troopers, mm-hmm. did I ever tell you about the molasses chugging contest?
No. I mean, like, you participated in one?
No. So when the first time I watched Super Troopers, I had it on DVD, so I watched the special features, and they talked about shooting in the beginning the molasses chugging contest.
Okay.
And they couldn't come up with something that was like molasses.
Uh-huh.
Because usually, so they actually chug molasses.
Okay.
And then after they yell cut, one of the guys got super nauseous and wanted to throw up, but you can't throw up molasses. So so everyone was just cracking up at listening to him retch and try to get it up.
Right.
So that was kind of brutal. But anyways, okay. So something less brutal. What did I watch? I ended up watching a movie. Truth be told, I missed some of the beginning, but I ended up sitting through Hell or High Water. So this was an independent movie that I think came out either last year or 2016, starring Chris Pine, Jeff Bridges, and Ben Foster. I think they're the only three people that I recognize. And it's essentially, structure-wise, a Western in Texas, but it's present day. And it's about ranches and banks and foreclosures and then bank robbing. And so Chris Pine and Ben Foster are two outlaws, reluctant outlaws. And Ben Foster is a little bit better at it. But, you know, Chris Pine is kind of the cowboy that got dragged into it. And so the two of them are trying to avoid capture from Jeff Bridges and his American Indian sidekick. And it has a very Western ending. But I enjoyed the heck out of this film. Ben Foster is so good when he plays a villain. And he's a little, you know, there's... So between the two brothers, there's Chris Pine, who kind of just wants to be able to save the ranch and not really hurt anybody, where Ben Foster has a record, and he's kind of more willing to do what needs to be done. But it's kind of the same story about ranches being taken away by the banks, mm-hmm. which happen, you know, in Westerns a lot back in the day, but kind of, you know, more about banks and, you know, the small town and economies just not being able to survive, you know, out in the country, I guess. So it was a very enjoyable flick. I kind of want to watch it again so I can see what happened in the beginning, but you kind of get the idea. So I recommend Hell or High Water. The only other thing that I watched was during lunch yesterday, I did some YouTube surfing, and I landed on, and I'm probably getting his name wrong. There was a TED Talk by James Veitch, who's a comedian, but his TED Talk is about what happens when you respond to spammers.
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
And so he trolls this spammer, and oh my God, it was hilarious. So, and of course, there was an extra level of enjoyment at, you know, being an IT guy at a local government who's combating spam. That seems like every day that spammers are, you know, getting the tables turned a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah.
He's got.
And there's actually two clips of him. There's actually a part one and then like a part two.
I think he's got at least three or four different ones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know, because I think he's been on Conan or. What's the other one? Either Kimmel or Fallon. I don't know which one, but he's been around. So I also recommend that. Other than that, I've been busy with games. Got back from a convention, had a lovely time, and yours truly ended up on a live stream of a game. So I'm gonna have to update everyone that if Eric ever ends up, I'm sure he'll do it eventually. But when the full video goes up. I hope I'll let everyone know. But his YouTube is Board Game Babylon. So hopefully that will happen very soon. All right. So that's going to be it time.
Wait. I'm sorry. Old man, my old man brain, you mentioned comedian. I remembered one more thing I did watch. Okay. I watched Secret Time with Bert Kreischer. So he has a comedy special on Netflix. And so it was hilarious. I sat down, me and Brittany watched it together. It is very funny. It is not as funny as the time he joined the Russian mafia, but it's pretty good. It was worth watching. The Machine, yeah, it is the Machine. It is not as epic as that. He does reference that at one point, but it was worth watching. I enjoyed it, and so that finishes up our share time.
All right, with authority. Okay, so now, if it's okay with Art, we are going to move on over to news. So, Art, what do you have for us?
Okay, so I'm going to start off with the Oscars. Oscars postponing its most popular film award. In a surprise reversal, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science announced today that they will be postponing the new popular movie category following widespread criticism, meaning the new Oscar category will not be present at the upcoming 91st Awards. This got a lot of hate. I mean, you know, the Oscars was never about being a popularity contest, at least not to the general audiences as a whole. Some people might say it's a popularity contest among the members of the voting academy, but that's neither here nor there. I think it's just interesting. They talked about adding a new category, and that got shot down by the people. We don't want to see that. Stick to what you're good at. And that's story number one.
All right. I actually have story number 1A, 1B, and 1C. They're kind of really quick here. Okay, number one, let's talk about a new Big Trouble in Little China movie. So I don't think you talked about this yet. So the new movie is not a remake. It is a continuation of the first film. So it looks like we are not going to have a Jack Burton character in this film. So I am actually pleased by this. So what's his name? Oh, producer Hiram Garcia. You can't remake a classic like that. So what we're planning to do is we're going to continue the story. So we're actually in a really great space with the story that we've cracked, but yeah, no remake. It's a continuation, and we are deep into development on that as well, and I think you'll start hearing some things about that probably soon. And he said, last we heard, Ashley Miller and Zach Stentz were writing the script. Okay, next I have Dark Phoenix reshoots are about to begin. There was some news that they are pushing back Dark Phoenix and New Mutants. Despite a report emerging last month that reshoots would be extensive and last for several months, numerous follow-up reports and quotes from those actually involved say the pickups are actually scheduled to run for only 3 weeks or so, a fairly standard amount of time for a large production of this scale. The studio hasn't commented on the reshoots at all this time, but they come almost a year after filming on the project concluded in October last year. Dark Phoenix was originally slated for release in November, but was pushed back to February next year in part because it is believed that the scheduling of its large ensemble cast means that extra filming couldn't be done until now. So there's that for fans of or people that are looking for the Dark Phoenix. And C, Designated Survivor, appropriately, is going to live on at Netflix. So this is the Kiefer Sutherland-led political drama, which was canceled by ABC back in May. It's going to be picked up for a third season on Netflix. So Netflix is going to pay a huge licensing fee to do this, in many cases covering most, if not all, the show's budget, which often will get the series greenlit. Star Trek Discovery, Riverdale, Better Call Saul, Black Lightning, Shooter, Dynasty, and the upcoming Night Flyers and Snowpiercer have all since adopted the same model. So the new season will go into production later this year for a 2019 launch, with the first two seasons finally set to arrive on Netflix in the United States this fall.
Okay,
so there was my little news itemettes. So what do you got next?
All right, Marvel plans more female superhero films. As part of EW's cover story regarding the upcoming Captain Marvel film this week, Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige spoke with the outlet and confirmed the company is currently developing more female-led Marvel movies and plans to announce their release in the near future. Currently, Ant-Man and the Wasp is the first film which includes a female hero in the title, but Captain Marvel will serve as the studio's first female-led superhero film. Let's see. Asked why female superhero solo movies took so long to develop, Feige says there are many, but one of them is the wrong perception that female superhero movies are not capable of having box office success. I think there are a lot of reasons, not least of which was fighting for many years the erroneous notion that audiences did not want to see female-led hero film because of a slew of films 15 years ago that didn't work. My belief was always that they didn't work not because they were female-led stories. They didn't work because they were not particularly good movies. We're looking at you, Catwoman. We're looking at you, Aeon Flux. We're looking at several other movies that came out around that time that were female-led, and they were garbage. So yeah, I like this new trend. We've got, you know, the success of Wonder Woman. I'm sure Captain Marvel will be fantastic. I'm so excited to see what all they do with it. There's also talk in here of a... there you go. The only other announced female-led Marvel film in the works is their long-awaited and long-overdue Scarlett Johansson-led Black Widow movie, which Kate Shortland is directing.
Okay. All right, so Art, let's play a little fill-in-the-blank.
Okay.
There are still 3 million people using Netflix for...
DVDs.
3 million people.
That's 1% of the population. It's insignificant.
So that's people that, it's not insignificant because they're getting 53 million a quarter.
Okay.
Out of that.
Wait. 53 million a quarter. It's every three mm-hmm. months. So that's what? That's 17 million thereabouts?
Let me make a little retraction. It says, that's not inconsequential for the company's bottom line. According to Variety, those DVD plans, which start at $7.99 a month, can account for as much as $53 million in quarterly profits, not necessarily revenue.
Okay. Above and beyond the $1 billion a month they're making in streaming services? I mean, you know, but whatever.
So it's worth noting that there are a number of good reasons to hold on to the old ways, though. Netflix's DVD selection is typically substantially better than that afforded by its various streaming licensing deals.
Oh, interesting.
So you can get DVDs of things that you wouldn't be able to stream. There's also the fact that the Netflix DVD business serves portions of the population that can't necessarily take advantage of the rapidly increasing internet speeds that made the company's streaming offerings viable, either because of cost or locale. Those folks might want to start reevaluating their media consumption habits soon, though. DVD subscriptions have fallen gradually, and it looks like that they might reach unsustainably low levels for the company as soon as 2022. And so it's not, it's just, I can't believe that they're still doing DVDs.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
According to this, we'll probably be gone in about 5-6 years. So, first VHS, then this. Okay. What you got next?
Okay. Tarantino Star Trek aims for an R rating. On the small screen, the Star Trek franchise is looking healthier than it has in years, with another season of Star Trek Discovery on the way, new short films, a new Picard series, and further shows planned. On the film front, however, things aren't going so smoothly, as breakdowns and negotiations with Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth seem to be stalling the progress as a fourth film of the J.J. Abrams-era rebooted film series. One of the film's stars, actor Carl Urban, who plays Dr. McCoy, appeared in Ticonderoga convention recently and said he's confident that the salary dispute with the two Chrises will be resolved and the film will go forward. If not, though, they have Quentin Tarantino's proposed Star Trek project in the works, as well with Urban confirming it involves the current film cast and looks to be targeting an R rating. So an R-rated Star Trek. I don't know what we would do with that. And by Quentin Tarantino, no less. Mm-hmm. Get these mother effing Klingons off my mother effing ship.
That wasn't Tarantino, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought that. But it's just the cursing. It's just that's what I'm imagining. Lots and lots of cursing in a Star Trek film. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Will it be the cursing or will it be the blood? I don't know.
I think there's definitely going to be both. Yeah, I don't know. Is it going to be set in the 70s? I know. You know, I think... I think we're at a point where we realize what Tarantino's wheelhouse is.
Right.
So, we've had
plenty of time travel episodes. So, I mean, one of the movies time traveled back to the 80s. It could time travel back to the 70s. It could happen.
All right, so this is going to be my last story. Okay. And usually we don't venture into the world of music. But Vulture.com has all 131 Van Halen songs ranked from worst to best.
Oh, my goodness.
And we're not going to go through, obviously, all 131. But I'm more interested in the top 10 than any other part of this list. So are you a Van Halen fan, Art?
I listened to quite a bit of Van Halen when I was in high school.
Okay. So do you remember any of their songs?
Oh, my God. Panama, Black and Blue. I'm not a big music guy. Jump.
Okay, Jump was them. So, okay, so working backwards here. Jump, 16.
Okay. Very popular.
And there's definitely some, I think there is a demarcation between the David Lee Roth Van Halen
right.
and the Sammy Hagar.
Oh, for sure, Van Halen. for sure.
And so, like, if you look at the worst song, number 131 is Why Can't This Be Love, right? And so he says, just so we're clear, this is not the single worst Van Halen song to listen to. I won't jump out of a moving vehicle if it comes on the radio. But Why Can't This Be Love was the first single released off 5150, and that was the worst decision the band ever made. And he's referring to the Sammy Hagar
right.
thing. If they'd opened up with... Well, the worst decision was that this was going to be the first single
right.
post Lee Roth. So they opened up with Get Up or Summer Nights, or if they'd opened up with Get Up or Summer Nights, the collective view of post-Roth VH would likely be quite different. Introducing the Hagar era with cold mid-tempo keyboard-based love song installed the belief that Van Halen was moving away from high-octane fiesta rock and towards responsible AOR or album-oriented record maturity. That sentiment was galvanized almost 4 months later when Roth's solo band debuted with Yankee Rose, an unbelievably ebullient song about wanting to fuck the Statue of Liberty. Roth never came up with another single as good as Yankee Rose, but the impact was seismic and perpetual. From that point forward, we would always know who was Laverne and who was Shirley. So, that's one of the songs I remember. I can't believe that it was the worst one. But okay, so we said at 16 we have Jump, we have 11 Feel Your Love Tonight, which is that one is still played regularly on Hair Nation on Sirius XM. At number 8, Running with the Devil. Number 7, You Really Got Me. 6, Hot for Teacher. 5, DOA, which I'm not really familiar with. But number 4, we have Panama. Number 3, Dance the Night Away. Number 2, Unchained. And I remember that I kind of had a debate with someone that works in recreation that's saying that Panama was the best Van Halen song, and it's not even, you can't even discuss it. But in this list, you have Unchained 2 spots higher. And at number 1, they have Eruption, which is basically a guitar solo, not really a song. Mm. I think he did a pretty good job on some of these songs, like number 19, Jamie's Crying, number 20, Beautiful Girls, Someone Get Me a Doctor, number 23, Ain't Talking About Love, which that was not, well, 1978. wow. But anyways, or Mean Street, number 28. I mean, it's so subjective. But like I said, I think Chuck Klosterman was the writer of this. He did a good job. I think it was a bad thing when they got rid of Lee Roth, as much as it pains me to say, because, you know, I've been listening to a lot of Hair Nation, and there is a lot of what they call cock rock, which is just about sex. Most of the songs that I listened to were like that. So, it's just interesting when you go back and listen to some of them. And then, you know, then there's other ones that are, you know, more about love. And then you get back to Van Halen, and it's more about, you know, getting laid. Or not laid, but leg. That he's, I think he said in Panama.
Yeah, I think that's why for sure. So many of the guys I hung out with in high school listened to it. Because that's, in high school, that's kind of where your brain's at. I was. I've never been a huge music guy. I like music. I like listening to it. But naming bands, naming songs, I'm like, no, maybe, but not reliably. I'm happy I picked out two that were in the top 20. So I feel like that's a win for me. All right. So wrapping up here, my last story: Urban on potential Dread return and series plans. So they are working on a Judge Dredd Mega City 1 TV series. So Urban says he's had many serious discussions about being involved, but he's still waiting to see if the series comes together. I'm not attached to it, although I did have a preliminary round of conversations with them. I'm interested in doing it. There are a lot of great stories to tell there. It is up to them. I don't know really where they are in the stages of development. If I get the opportunity, great. Otherwise, someone else would do it, and we can all see some more Judge Dredd. The idea for Mega City 1 is basically to build the show around more rookie judges and young new judges, and Dredd would come in and out. And I said I'd do it, but it has to be done in a meaningful way. I can't just come on and grunt and pull faces. There has to be a story there. There has to be a kind of little arc and story that we are trying to sell, so we'll see what they do. So, Judge Dredd, Mega City 1 has not yet set production or air dates. Urban has previously expressed interest in a film sequel to Dredd, but there's been no progress on that front. So right now we're looking at a Judge Dredd Mega City 1 TV series, which is being worked on, and he could appear in it, and that would make me happy.
You know, I'm always hearing about Dredd coming back, and then it never happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyways. All right. So that is going to be it for this episode of Backseat Box Office. So our website is backseatproducers.com, where you can find our voicemail number, find back episodes, find episodes of the main show, Backseat Producers. Other than that, thank you for listening. And Art, what do you have to say for yourself?
Good night, everybody. It is late, and I need to go to bed.